Kimball case and the Vail case will stay in the court area. You need not stay in the courtroom during the first argument. We would appreciate that. We are recording the arguments and the comments of the court in case you need to avail yourself of that at some later time. We'll hear then from the relator and the ex parte Thomas P. Hughes.
May it please the court. My name is Greg Pearson. I'm attorney for the relator Thomas P. Hughes. I'm joined today by my colleague, Mr. Nicholas Aycock. As the court is aware, this case involves a controversy and dispute between two elected officials, Thomas P. Hughes, the district clerk of Tarrant County, Texas, and Honorable John Street, a district judge in Tarrant County, Texas. On January 1st, 1987, Mr. Hughes was installed as the Tarrant County District Clerk. Prior to his installation, it had been a long-standing local practice and custom to mail out copies of all the trial dockets to all the district courts to all the attorneys who were on such dockets. This obviously cost money, and after Mr. Hughes was installed, he discontinued this practice. On February 5th of this year, the Honorable John Street issued an order to Tom Hughes, directing Mr. Hughes to resume mailing the docket for Judge Street's court.
You have a central docket in Tarrant County, or is it a court by court?
It is a little bit of both. When they mailed it out, we had separate dockets for each of the courts. It was about 162 pages long. Among other things, Judge Street's order, February 5th, 87, ordered Mr. Hughes to immediately mail out the March 1987 docket of Judge Street's court to all attorneys involved in the March cases pending before that court, as well as any other attorneys who requested copies. The order further required Mr. Hughes to certify in writing to Judge Street that Mr. Hughes would mail out the docket in the future. Judge Street also mandated in this order that a copy of the order accompanying the mailing of the docket. Something very known about this particular order. It was not captioned with a style. It did not make a reference to a pending case. It had no cause number. It just was filed order and was delivered to Mr. Hughes. On February the 17th of this year, Judge Street issued a show cause order to Mr. Hughes, ordering Mr. Hughes to appear before Judge Street to show cause why Judge Street shouldn't hold Mr. Hughes in contempt of court for not obeying the February 5th order. Subsequently, on February the 24th, Mr. Hughes, through counsel, filed a motion to recuse Judge Street on the ground that he was constitutionally disqualified. Now, although this was labeled a motion to recuse, it was subsequently determined that what it really was a motion to disqualify. After this, a district clerk pro tempore was appointed by Judge Murray, the presiding judge of our district, and the case was given the filing cause number in that action. The recusal motion referred to the Honorable Frank Douthit, a judge of another court, for determination. April 7th, Judge Douthit ruled that Judge Street was not disqualified.
What was the allegation of disqualification?
Interest as a party. On April 30th, Judge Street issued a new show cause order. It bears note that the new show cause order brought in additional charges in addition to those that he's been previously brought in the first show cause order. The second show cause order, among other things, added two counts of alleged direct contempt about some alleged disrespectful statements that Mr. Hughes had made about Judge Street. On May the 11th, Mr. Hughes filed a second motion to recuse or disqualify. This motion was different than the first motion. It noted that the additional charges had been filed by Judge Street and asserted that Judge Street was disqualified and only pursuant to Article 5, Section 11 of the Texas Constitution, but also based on the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution, and further that he should recuse himself under Texas canons of judicial ethics. Concurrently with filing this motion, we also filed a motion to dismiss or abate and a motion to continue. Judge Street, on May 14th, overruled all of these motions by written order. On May 15th of this year, a hearing was held in Judge Street's court on the show cause order of April the 30th. Judge Street began the hearing by reading a prepared statement. At the point at which counsel for Mr. Hughes felt that the statement was going into possibly disputed facts, an objection was made pursuant to Rule 605 of Texas Rule 7 that Judge Street could not testify in a case over which he was presiding. Judge Street overruled the objection and continued. At the conclusion of the hearing, Judge Street found Mr. Hughes in contempt of five separate counts. The two counts of alleged direct contempt, two counts of failing to mail the March docket, failing to mail the April docket, and further held him in contempt on a coercive contempt, which was Mr. Hughes failed to certify in writing to Judge Street that he'd mail out the docket in the future. Judge Street ordered Mr. Hughes jailed the four counts of punitive contempt, sentenced him to 30 days in jail for each for a total of 120 days, and fined him $500 for each for a total of $2,000. On the coercive contempt, which Judge Street brought about, he ordered that Mr. Hughes be jailed until such time as he would sign a statement promising to mail the docket down in the future. We filed a motion for relief pursuant to Section 21.002 of the Texas Government Code, inasmuch as Mr. Hughes is an officer of the court. That motion was granted, except that should be coercive contempt. Mr. Hughes was jailed on coercive contempt. We then brought an application for writ of habeas corpus to the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals. Mr. Hughes was then dismissed, released on bond. Subsequently, the Court of Criminal Appeals decided to deny the writ without prejudice to filing the same in this court. We then filed it in this court, and Mr. Hughes was released on writ of habeas corpus pending further action. In the argument I have today...
Just a moment.
Yes.
After that, since he did file it, he was an officer of the court. Has it been referred to some other judge for determination of Judge Street's ruling?
Today it is not. There are a number of different argument issues contained in our brief. Today I'm going to touch on only four of them. First, we think what Judge Street did to be judged by substance rather than by form. By substance, we think it was an attempted mandamus, and as such, failed. If ever it was not an attempted mandamus, we feel what it must have been was an administrative order by which Judge Street was attempting to enact a new local rule for his court. If that's what it was, we think it also failed. Well, if for some reason it wasn't a mandamus, it wasn't an unauthorized and invalid administrative rule, and it was something that's valid, we still feel that the order commitment was void because Judge Street was disqualified as a matter of law conducting the hearing. Finally, if it was a valid order and Judge Street was qualified, then in that event, we say that the order commitment is still void because the order February 5th was not sufficiently precise to put Mr. Hughes on notice precisely what he was supposed to do to stay out of contempt. I address the attempted mandamus argument first. The distinguishing feature of mandamus is it is an action used to compel action and coerce performance of pre-existing legal duty on the part of a public official or a judicial officer. And I cite Texas Jurisprudence 3rd, Extraordinary Writ, Section 7, and the case of citing again for authority. Tom Hughes, like Judge Street, is an elected public official. If indeed he has a clear duty, non-discretionary duty to mail out these documents, we dispute that, but if he had such a duty, then the act of Judge Street attempting to compel him to perform that duty was, by its very nature, a mandamus. As a mandamus, the order failed for several reasons.
Why do you say he didn't have a duty to send out the notices?
Under the duties of district clerk, it set forth, I believe, in Section 51.300 or something of the Texas Government Code, it lists the duty of the district clerk. The mailing of documents is not listed. Further, there are plenty of courts in Texas where district clerks who do not mail out the documents. I don't think they're all violating their legal duties in not mailing them out. Next, there's no duty on the part of a clerk to specifically notify people of when the case is coming for trial. Mr. Acup can give you the authority on that.
Well, how is the court what should a court do that desires to have this practice?
What they should do is get with the other district judges in their district and pass a uniform local rule. If at that point in time the court refuses to obey the uniform local rule, then they should bring a suit to mandamus against the court and tell him when it's your back. At that point in time, this interested court should determine whether or not the judges have met the test of potentiality set forth in district judges versus the Gregg County Commissioner's case.
You think if the judges in Tarrant County, I just want to be sure I understand you, because I think this is important to orderly distribution of authority in our court system. The judges, if they had met together in Tarrant County and formulated a local rule which this court then would have acquiesced in and allowed this, you think then the district clerk would have had a duty to comply with it?
I think this court would have complied with it. I can't answer the question of whether or not he would have had a legal duty. I don't think that in the law I stand, he has such a duty. However, in a writ from an affidavit for mandamus, they may have been able to show that the sending out of these notices was essential to the orderly administration of justice. And if that were established, yet he'd have a duty. If he didn't follow the writ of mandamus, he'd be held in contempt.
What are some of the broad duties given to the district clerk under this government code that you're talking about? Does it speak about his duty to foster and help the administration of justice?
Not specifically.
Same thing about cooperating with the court?
It lists four or five separate things. One is to file the papers, collect fees, things of that nature. It also states that he should do all other form of the legal duties imposed by law, which that leads us into what are those other legal duties. There's nothing specific on it. If it's something that's essential to the administration of justice, and that is established in an impartial court, then certainly you have to mail them out.
You would agree that neither official here is doing himself very much good in the eyes of the public, terms of having this kind of unseemly dispute between two elected officials who ought to be trying to work for the same purpose.
I totally agree. And I think it's most unfortunate that this matter wasn't resolved by Judge Street going to other district judges if he wanted to have this enacted and asking him to go along with him under the new rules of judicial administration. And act new local rule, and then have it tested out. We wouldn't have this great.
Or maybe Clerk Hughes should have gone to see the judges, since he was the new person. He'd just been elected. He's going to stop a practice that had been long standing there. Perhaps he should have gone to the judges or Judge Street and the other judges and said, "Listen, I've got a budget problem. I don't know whether I can continue to do this. Let's talk about this. Let's work this out." Don't you think that might have helped also?
No, it would have been equally wise. I certainly agree.
What about charging for the docket? You know, any lawyer that wants it to charge the cost of doing it.
Well, there's nothing in Judge Street's order that mentions the name that. I'm going to find the record and tell you that we have offered to provide those documents. Anyone who wants to send in the money, like $5 a month, the privilege of having them mailed out. But that hasn't resolved this dispute. That is entirely out of the record.
Counsel, in reading the documents here, I sense that there's some political overtones that are underpinning all of this. Is there anything in the record about the clerk and the judge being of any political war?
I think the record shows the feelings of the judge.
Are they both Democrats?
No, they're not.
The clerk is a Republican?
The district is a Democrat.
The Republican? This is a
clerk is a Republican. He was elected in 86 and installed in January 1st of 87. And I can't really cite the record where that shows, but I don't disagree with the comment.
You what?
I don't disagree with the comment, but I can't find anything in the record.
You don't disagree with what comment?
That it might be a political matter underpinning this, but I can't find anything in the record to show it. Um, back the argument. First, we believe Judge Street had no jurisdiction to issue this mandamus order. Mandamus is a civil suit governed by Texas Rule of Civil Procedure. I cite the case of Bloomfield Royalty versus Carco at the Houston 14th District A 958 NRA. Rule 22 of our Texas Rule of Civil Procedure provides that civil suit is dismissed by filing a petition to the clerk's office. And further, in some of Winfrey versus Chandler, a Supreme Court case also 958, it was held that the court may issue extraordinary writ only if its jurisdiction has been lawfully invoked. It's undisputed here that Judge Street didn't commence any action by filing a petition. Instead, he just sent an order. Therefore, he had no jurisdiction, if it was a mandamus, to act, because the jurisdiction had not been first lawfully invoked. Further, this order was issued entirely ex parte in violation of Rule 694 of the Rule of Civil Procedure, which specifically prohibits ex mandamus.
Let's go back to that other point. Under the inherent powers of a court, would not a judge have the right to issue an order not under any particular cause number to protect his powers? I'm not asking you to concede that he has the power to do it or it's a proper power, but assuming that he does have the power to do it, wouldn't he have right to issue an order?
Certainly, the judge would have the right to issue an administrative order. But that begs the next question. If he issues the order and is not complied with, what happens next? In the case of District Judge versus Gregg County, I think they followed exactly the right procedure. They wanted the judges up there, two of them wanted court coordinators. They decided just what you mentioned, that they had the inherent power and they needed these coordinators to properly administrate the justice. They issued an order to that effect. When the order was not complied with, they didn't hold the commission down to court and hold them in contempt. Instead, they filed a petition for mandamus in a separate defensive court, then had the matter decided by that court. The court held that they certainly did have the inherent power to protect their jurisdiction and to ensure the orderly administration of justice. It further held, and this is very critical, that they had the duty of showing that this was in fact essential. There was a test of essentiality. The court held that they failed that particular test. And therefore, for that reason, the writ was not granted. I think that is by far the best procedure for resolving these cases. If the order is issued and the question is whether or not the order is valid or is performed a non-discretionary function, the way to handle it is not just holding the individual in contempt, another public official, is to file a petition for a writ of mandamus in a separate court, let this matter be decided by an impartial judge.
If we don't give the court some sort of ability to get the clerks to cooperate with them, don't you create a real serious problem out there in the real world? The clerks could practically shut down the show. I'm not going to send out a trial setting. You know, tomorrow, what would it be? I mean, where does the court fit into this? If we don't give them some sort of power to run their courts the way they think it ought to be.
We're talking about the real world. In the real world, the clerks will try to get along with the judges in most cases.
I would sure hope so. Do you think that's true in most places in Texas?
I certainly do.
That the clerks take a sympathetic attitude toward the courts, most places, don't they?
And vice versa.
And vice versa. They're not at war with each other. They're not fighting over turf. They're trying to serve the public interest, administration of justice.
Well, we hope that was the situation. You really believe that's true everywhere in Texas?
Not everywhere.
I noticed Mr. Hardy sitting behind you. Wouldn't he be the first to admit that he has a running battle going with his district judges?
I
don't
think they would have filed the trial.
Well, I'm sure everybody knows that. It
would be a lot better than bringing them up here. You would think that we could be spared having to decide this kind of an issue.
I would hope so.
Counsel, if I could focus in a little bit more on what's bothering me. I think you would agree, and it seems to me clear, that the whole reason for the existence of a district clerk's office is to service the courts. Did you agree with that statement?
To serve the public by serving with the courts, yes.
Well, they don't serve the public in an amorphous sense. They serve somebody in particular. They answer to somebody in particular other than by election. It's their duty to do the job that the statute sets out in order to serve the courts and the functioning of the courts. Is that right?
That's certainly true, but we're a public official.
I didn't realize I'd get any argument out of that question. Go ahead.
They certainly are there to serve and work with the courts. That's part of their function.
Work with the courts?
Well, I think so. The court and the clerk always work with the county commissioner to measure regarding budget. In the real world, we have to deal with money. It'd be nice if all the clerks had unlimited funds, mail out documents to anybody that wanted to do, Christmas cards, all that.
Well, that's really a different question. I'm talking about the basic duty of the district clerk is to service the courts and administration of justice. And the lawsuits that get filed, make sure they're filed correctly, all the papers are filed, make sure they're furnished to the judges, to the courts, make sure the statistics and the judgments and all that are handled according to law. Isn't that right?
Well, certainly their duty.
Is there anything in the statute that says or that delineates the responsibilities in terms of the duty of the district clerk owes to a particular judge in a multi-court county? That is, like in your county where you have a number of district courts, can one judge set out on his own to tell the district clerk what to do, or is there any statutory basis for either requiring or not requiring the entire, all of the district judges to enter some kind of an order like Judge Streets entered? And if they had as a body, would he be obligated to follow it?
Statutory basis, no. Under the rules of judicial administration, which this court enacted on February 4th of this year, I believe the court contemplated the scheme by which uniform local rules would be adopted. I think one of the reasons, again, I'm trying to read your mind in those rules, and that's somewhat difficult, but I think one of your reasons was to avoid just this kind of problem, where we have one judge issuing one set of rules, another one wants different rules, to the point that it ends up confusing the attorney, confusing the clerk's office, and we end up in a big mess. I think that under the rules of judicial administration, what should have been done was if Judge Street wanted the documents mailed out and felt that was important and essential to the administration of justice in his court, he should have gone to his fellow judges and said, look, we've got these new rules of judicial administration. This gives us authority, in fact, mandate to adopt uniform local rules. I think one thing about being these rules is mail out the documents.
Well, I think that's a good answer. But my question really comes back to, can a single judge take it on himself to do it, or is there some authority in those rules for the judges as a corporate body to order that it be done? I'm trying to figure out where our corners are here.
I don't think a single judge can do it.
Anything in the rules speak to that?
The rules speak that in a multi-court county, such as Tarrant County, there must be a uniform set of local rules. And that must be approved by the presiding judge, and I believe approved by this court, to ensure uniformity with the statewide.
That kind of sounds like a single judge can't do it then, doesn't it?
It's my opinion a single judge can't do it, but I can't point to statute saying that it's an absolute prohibition. There may be a situation where a single judge could, but in that situation, the only thing for the judge to do is to, if he can't get it enacted as a local rule, is try for a writ of mandamus to see if he can prove it under law. There is some authority for him to do it, and in fact, it is essential for the administration of justice.
And that would be the remedy rather than just refusing to comply with the order.
I don't understand the question.
Well, that's all right.
You're taking the position, as I understand it, that even the Board of Judges of Tarrant County could not order the district clerk to publish the document. They would have to go file a mandamus action against the district clerk. Is that your position?
I think they could order it done via local rules. But
if he doesn't do it, then what do they do?
File a mandamus.
They cannot enforce their order by contempt.
And for themselves, no. And I get into that.
Well, of course, as an officer of the court, he has the right to have the matter certified to another judge who's not prejudiced in the matter.
Not with respect to matters of voices, section 21.02, to direct intent that officers of the court can ask another judge to hear. And even in that situation, even if you're talking about non-voices, I don't think that section 21.002 would fully fix the problem, because a judge in that situation, the second judge, under the way the rule is specifically written, can only define guilt innocence, not punishment. Their authority based on the case of ex parte Charles Ben Howe, 1972 case in the Court of Criminal Appeals, which I believe you cited in your article on the subject. So that court held second judge could, in fact, also determine punishment. But that's not really clear at this point in time. If that was clear, then I think that would fix the disqualification problem with respect to punitive contempt, but not with respect to coercive contempt, especially if the court reports to that.
But you're certainly suggesting a better way to do this is go about it in a mandamus action.
I certainly am.
And let me be sure. Are you suggesting that if they do adopt a local rule under our administrative procedures that we've established, that then the clerk would be obliged to send out these, I'm just trying to see where you are now, and I'd like to know where the clerks are. They filed some amicus here. I'd like for them to clarify.
Yes.
Would they then feel legally obliged to comply if the judges as a whole adopted a local rule?
That's a hard question. Would they feel legally obliged to comply?
Well, you almost suggesting they would be. You said go ahead and mandamus them. I'm just asking you as an officer of the court, do you think the mandamus would be good?
I don't know. I think it would depend on, is it official to the administration of justice? I don't really think it is. I think that
Now, this is ridiculous. If a group of judges in a major county in Texas get together, elected by the people, and decide that they want to send out docket notices to the lawyers, that the clerk can just stiff them?
Well, we're not talking so much about notice situation here. There was no requirement to be sent it to pro se litigants. Further, the order was so broad, it didn't say just attorneys in Texas. It said, any other attorneys, we ask for a copy. That's unlimited. If we limit it just to attorneys involved in the case, say they pass a local rule, then as a practical matter, I think that would fix the problem.
Okay.
The clerk would send out the documents.
Then we found an area of agreement. You concede that if the judges in Tarrant County would get together and on a joint local rule say that these notices are to be sent out to lawyers of record, that the clerk would and should comply.
The clerk would comply.
All right.
I'm not sure all the clerks would agree with you on that. I think they think they're elected officials, and they're bound only by the statute governing them, and not many local rules that might be passed.
Well, the way I answered the question was, I felt Mr. Hughes would comply. It's whether he should comply or not. We get down to the finish.
The question is, would he have to comply?
Is there a duty?
Is there an absolute duty for which he can be held in contempt, or he can be mandamus? If there's no absolute duty, if it's not a ministerial duty, you know, I don't know where we are.
I don't think there's ministerial duty to do that. No, I don't.
You can say it would be discretionary?
I think it would be discretionary.
As opposed to mandatory absolute duty.
That's correct. And then, we're back to the having some third party decide whether or not the judges have met the test of potentiality. And I don't know if they can meet the test or not. Under the legal duties of the clerk is set forth in the government code, there's no duty to mail out the documents. But if under other duties imposed by law in that section of the code, they can show essentiality to the disinterested judge that was upheld, then he has to mail them out. So I don't think there's, I think that would be discretionary duty in my personal opinion.
What did we say in the administrative rules about the clerks mailing out notices? Wasn't there a section in there?
I can't recall that section at this moment.
And I'm not debating now whether a court rule promulgated by the Supreme Court would or wouldn't be binding. We don't have that I'm just asking for information. It seems to me like we put something in the administrative rules that said that the clerk shall mail out the, and I'm not saying this kind of notice is specified. Wasn't there something in there about that?
No, I don't recall it specifically. And I'll be an error to, yes, this one.
Anything further? We hear from your opponent.
On the qualification of professional services, very quickly, if you expected civil action, you think Judge Street would be qualified, and if he was the party to bring the action.
On the basis of interest.
Matter of interest. I distinguished the case of Cameron, which decided to bring this court is well aware of. 1979 case where an attorney sued the Supreme Court to enjoin an assessment that he made against the bar.
The bar building over there.
That's correct. In that case,
Cameron versus Green.
Right. In that case, the justice was finished. In this case, the judge was in fact a plaintiff. I'm sorry, my time is up. Thank you.
I will hear from you.
May I please report, I don't think it took this court long to get to the real meat of the problem. If you'll bear with me about 3 or 4 minutes to outline facts in the case that differ a little bit from what was presented, I'd like to. On February the 4th of 1987, this court promulgated rules that say clearly to me that each district judge shall use the mail to let people know the cases are set. Any questions about that? The local rules don't speak to this. Nothing about this in the local rules. No attempt here to change any local rules. That order was delivered, Judge Street delivered an order in connection with that rule telling the clerk to mail out the docket for his court, a trivial matter. Mail a letter, really safe. Mail a letter for the court.
At 160 page, not a letter, but an 160 page document.
No, Your Honor. No. You can't mail a 160 page document for $5 a month. The settings for that court, nothing. You know, it's has 20 cases set a week, so you're sent mailing out 80 cases, which is maybe 3 pages of documents. You're talking about, when he's talking about that other thing, he's talking about every domestic relations court, criminal court, district court, everything in the courthouse. That has nothing to do with district court. District says, mail out the documents from a court. That's all he asked. That's all he told him. Now, immediately, without any word of any kind, the only thing, next thing that happened, the very next day, and this is in the record, he went to the clerk to serve this particular court and said, you go up and tell that judge to go jump in the lake as far as that order is concerned. That's the next
in the record.
Huh? That's in the record. On the very next day, the order was issued. You go up and tell that judge to jump in the lake.
And let me
first
see if I
tell a district judge to do that.
Let me see if I understand what he was asking the clerk to do. I want to be sure that we're on the same wavelength.
Right.
He was asking the clerk to send out notices to the lawyers that were shown on the docket sheet, his lawyers in the case, only for his court.
Right.
Which would involve each week about 20 odd cases, yes, more or less.
Really nothing. You know, no big deal. They print the dockets up anyway. No problem. Each court has their own dockets. No problem.
Do you have the order with you, Counselor? Is there any, I can't find it.
Pardon?
Do you have the order, specific order?
Yes, it's the first attached document in
the brief?
Yeah, it's the first document in the transcript.
And we say in our administrative rule, we mandate trial judges, or do we? Say, shall use the mails to get the notices out?
District, you have county or district shall. and you just drop down.
And most judges don't have secretaries.
No, he doesn't have secretaries.
A lot of judges don't have administrative assistants. Where else would they go?
They don't have court, they don't have administrators, and all this thing that's been talked about in these other briefs have been filed. There are no administrators at the court.
Where else would they go to get the mail out?
He does it himself. He types them and mails them out of it. Now, it's in the record also in connection with what happened is that the clerk makes up the docket, and she said in her testimony in the case, after she had told her to go tell the court to jump in the lake, that the only reason she wasn't mailing out the docket was because he had told her not to.
Who had told her not to?
The clerk. The lakeholder in this case had come to her desk and said, you go tell that judge to jump in the lake, as far as his order about my mailing out the docket. So she finally brought herself to do it. And so there was an attempt to discuss the matter, which is in the record, and that deals with his coming up and calling the court Apollo, or telling the court that the court thought he was Apollo, and you know, that didn't bear much fruit. And so the judge said, you know, I've got to have an order, I've got to have this done. Now, I think the real crux of this matter, the court got right to it and heard. Have you got to file a mandamus case every time you want the janitor to open the door? Or the court reporter to read back that question?
Counselor, aren't you hitting that on the crux of the problem right there? When you say that you're talking about the janitor to clean the floor or something else as opposed to another elected official?
Let me get to it. Yes. Or the bailiff who's sitting there.
Of course, the bailiff is particularly under that court to operate under the instruction of that particular
I don't see any distinction between the fact of election as opposed to appointment. Let me, if the court will indulge me for a moment, you look at the history of the district clerk in Texas. The fact that he's elected doesn't make him even a clerk. He's still a clerk. Whether he's an elected clerk or an appointed clerk, and the clerk comes from the Old English. It's right in our background, or our statutes, our Constitution. In the Old English, the clerk is a cleric who could read. One person in the community could read in England. They called him clerk. And during the carpetbag days, the directive out of Washington was that clerks of the court could be replaced if the judge who was appointed in Washington noted on the minutes of the court the reason. It didn't have to be a good reason. Now, the framers of the 1871 Constitution and the 1876 Constitution then elected district clerks in order to avoid the problem of just dismissal, which had gone on there for a period of several years during the carpetbag days. But that didn't change the fact that the district clerk is a clerk. The person who is appointed to serve this particular court, who in this case will say Jane Pinkston, he's appointed by the district clerk, by Mr. Hughes. And really the order relates to her. She would be the one who would type up those 20, 30 envelopes and mail them out. And since she works for Hughes, and Hughes says, you're not going to do it. But I'm telling you, you're not going to do it. And the crux of the matter is whether or not the court, district judge, has he got to file a mandamus because you tell the clerk, please call Rex McIntyre on the phone in pursuance to the rule issued by this Supreme Court last February 4th, which said you'll use the phone and mail bell folks by 7. Would you call Rex McIntyre on the phone and tell him to be down here at 9 o'clock in the morning for a setting that we had set for 1, we're going to move up to 9, and the clerk says, no, I'm not going to do that.
Would this be a good place to talk about, and I think it is in the logical sequence, correct me if you think I'm wrong, to talk about whether or not one judge can do it his own way, and another judge can do it his way, and a third judge said it's still a third way. And assuming, and I think you're correct in this, that the district clerk exists only to serve the courts, what kind of a chaotic situation would we have if every judge had a different system for sending out notices?
You'd have a Dallas system. Let me point out that...
I'm not too fond of Dallas, so go ahead and talk about it.
Let me point out that if you're dealing with a rule change, you're dealing with somebody attempting to set a set of rules, there's no question in my mind that had under your order, if the council of judges of Tarrant County got together and said that you'll mail out the dockets, and you address the question, if the question were addressed, you will mail out the dockets every other month. You won't mail them out in February or something. I'm sure that was going to, I think under your order, that would be controlled over Judge Street. No question about that. That has not happened. And it may well happen. I'm not saying that. But the fact is there is no rule. Nobody can point out a rule that tells the district clerk to mail out dockets or not mail out dockets. It had been done for 100 years. We're suddenly changed. Judge Street, and running the court, blocked, and folks ought to know when the case is set, said, just, in my case, mail out my dockets.
Wherein lies the problem of no local rules in Tarrant County?
Pardon?
Wherein lies the problem of no local rules in Tarrant County?
Well, Judge, remember this, that we're here dealing with what the practitioner and the client, the litigant, the folks that are in the courtroom, deal is very, very important matter. When is the case that we're dealing with here today? And we had no problem with that. There was never a problem with that over a period of the last 40-some-odd years I've been practicing law. There's never been a problem with it because it's always been done.
Did the prior district clerk mail out the docket to the lawyers?
Yes.
What other way do lawyers have of learning that they have a case set for trial other than by a docket?
I go down and ask, I guess. I suppose what you do now, you go down and, well, this is outside the record, and I'm not sure how important it is, but I want to answer the question, but they still make up the big docket. It's a matter of practice, still make the big old docket after you go down there and get it. You want the lawyer wants to go down there and get it. That's how it's done now. But, you know, in these areas where, Lord, you pay $220 to file a lawsuit, and I don't even know that or not. You've been practicing lately. You used to cost $3 to file a divorce when I started practicing law. Now it costs $220. Looks like 22 cents of that to go for mail. You know, it doesn't seem to be a very unreasonable thing to think the district clerk's going to spend maybe even a dollar of it over the life of the case to let me know when the case is set. And as a matter of fact, it to me is purely a non-discretionary matter when the court has said send out the docket. I want to point out something to the court.
Counsel,
you've asked the question 10 times here.
Before you move on, I am troubled by the way you characterize the case and opposing counsel characterize the case. You characterize the case as an obligation of the clerk to mail notice of trial setting.
Right.
Opposing counsel says that's not the issue at all. It's not notice of trial setting. It's mailing out a docket. And when I hear docket, I hear cases that are pending, all the cases that are pending in the court for a month or a
trial
big old set. Document.
Not trial settings. The trial settings is all we're talking about. The cases that are set for the month of February. Mail those out. That's all we're talking about.
And that can be as many as, you said 30 cases.
Well,
certainly more than 30 cases are set.
Say 20 cases a week. Say there's 80 cases. They have 3 jury weeks a month. 25 cases, 75 cases, maybe 100 cases, maybe 9 cases. But it's not 3,000 cases where you've got, it's not any huge task. I wanted to point this out to the court. You asked this question many, many times over, and I think you've got the answer. The position that they have taken all along in this case, it doesn't make any difference if all the judges in Tarrant County told you to do it, or if all of them but one or all the judges in North Texas told you to do it. He says, I don't have to do it. Now, that's been their position throughout, and I think he still takes that position today. He is saying that the clerk has no legal duty to obey this court's rules. The clerk has no legal duty. Now, by virtue of the fact that I've got a bar license, I'm an officer of the court. He is no less an officer of that court just because the people elected him.
he is still an officer of that court. And I think, without equivocation, the court has the inherent power to maintain some semblance of running a judicial system in that court. And I think it certainly needs that part of that system would be letting folks know when their case is set. And that's all this pertains to. And you have to file a mandamus against the clerk every time the clerk says, I won't do it. Or are you entitled to have the authority to do it? If you don't do it, I'm going to have to punish you. The issue of contempt case. Now, I thought, there aren't many cases on this, obviously. It just didn't happen. I mean, not too many often. The clerk will tell the ditch to jump in the lake, I'm not going to mail out the court. Or I'm not going to do this, that doesn't happen. And by the way, I don't know of any political counsel. If you ask a question, and I don't, I'm not aware of that. I thought that we probably had a new problem in Texas. This never happened. I got a brief in the mail yesterday from another amicus curiae. I was looking up some cases, and I ran across, this is not first impression in Texas. 1913 is a Dallas Court of Appeals case that I found yesterday, in which the district said that mandamus will lie against the district clerk who refuses to issue an execution. Not mandamus, contempt will lie. It was cited for the prosecution that mandamus will lie. The Corpus Christi Board in 1968. It's Krugel versus Williams, 153 Southwest, 903, 1913 case. And it's cited for the proposition later that mandamus will lie. I don't question mandamus will lie in this case.
He refused to do what? What did he refuse to do in that case?